traditional diplomacy was built for slowness. Speed without legitimacy is brittle.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast with Sanjay Puri. AI is changing the world faster than rules can keep up. So how do we protect people without killing progress? Each week, Sanjay brings you inside conversations with global leaders, policymakers, and innovators who are wrestling with that exact question. So if you're curious about the future of technology and how it's governed, you're in the right place. Introducing Rui Pedro Duarte, a global AI trailblazer redefining how intelligence, ethics, and diplomacy intersect. As Managing Director and Global AI Delegate, Rui bridges the gap between innovation and responsibility.
Please join me in welcoming Rui Pedro Duarte to Regulating AI.
Thank you, Sanjay. It's a real pleasure to be here.
We want to just talk a little bit about your background. It spans from serving in Parliament to communications for academic publisher and now in this role. How has this diverse experience shaped your perspective on unique governance challenges of AI?
For me, this whole journey and also this book that I just wrote, the Statecraft 3.0, The Age of AI Deployment, really began with a haunting question. What happens when the art of diplomacy is no longer human only, right? And that also reflects my journey in my career. I've spent 16 years between two very different worlds. One was politics, as you mentioned, serving in parliament, shaping policy, working inside the slow machinery of statecraft. And the other was the private sector, in which also I had the opportunity to work for open science in an open access company, one of the biggest open access publishers. And by working in science publishing, I watched how fast knowledge and technology are accelerating with AI reshaping research itself. And that for me was a trigger to start writing and becoming an AI thinker. I believe that AI sits exactly, right at the collision points of these two tempos that I have in my journey, brought me to the dilemma that I tried to reflect on my book, which is diplomacy is too slow, the state machinery, what I call statecraft 2.0, and AI is too fast. So how can we make diplomacy evolve?
How do you define, or what do you mean by AI diplomacy? Is it using AI for diplomacy? What exactly is AI diplomacy?
Traditional diplomacy was built for slowness. Think about the peace of Westphalia or the Cold War treaties or any other peace treaties. They took years to negotiate, right? Sometimes even decades. Think about climate diplomacy, the most recent form of diplomacy that has been bringing together different stakeholders to the table of negotiations from Kyoto to Paris. It took whole generations to mature. And that pace worked because politics and technology advanced at roughly the same tempo. But AI breaks that rhythm. And that's where I make a point, and the point of AI diplomacy. It evolves exponentially. So by the time diplomats and the old state legacy institutions debate lethal autonomous weapons or any other issue, drones like Cargo 2 were already deployed in Libya, operating on their own judgment. So this is an example I give in my book of the mismatch between the political tempo of the legacy institutions and what we used to know as diplomacy and the technological tempo that we have today. So this is already here. And that's the reason why, Sanjay, I use the term quantum diplomacy. It's diplomacy designed for the age of acceleration, for the times that we live in, the ones that are accelerating. And it's about real-time adaptation. It's about having treaties behaving more like software instead of running at the glacial pace, self-updating as risks change. So It's about expanding the negotiating table, not just to states, but also to AI labs, to open source communities, to corporations, to civil society, and even decentralized networks, making sure that negotiation happens at machine speed while still grounded in human values. It's a big challenge, of course. It's not easy. In AI time, 2 years or a 4 years mandate is a century. So the forces, that forces politicians to break out of short-termism. And for the first time, I think leaders may be compelled to think intergenerationally. And that's what I believe AI paradoxically could save diplomacy from its own inertia.
One of the big topics right now, and I'm going to discuss that also with you later, is AI agents. Agentic AI has become a big, big issue. Do you think AI agents, like for a country or a company or any position, could be negotiating with other AI agents on key topics?
I think so. I think it's absolutely possible. I think we'll see that in no time, Sanjay. And I think we should be prepared, and countries should be prepared, organizations should be prepared for AI to AI protocols. All the regulations, all the oversight that we have on AI also comprehends and understands, reflects that reality. We cannot afford to have one AI governance world, again, legacy institutions trying to run after AI, because this is not the same as internet revolution. This is a new electricity grid, Sanjay, and this will repower all society as we knew it into a new thing, into a new world. So a new social contract is expected with AI, and we need absolutely to make sense of what that means. And bring the stakeholders together, bring the main actors together to sooner rather than later shape AI and make the most of it. It doesn't have to be a negative disruption. That's my point. It can and should be and has all the potential to be a positive disruption. It just depends on us. Depends on what we do now, what we do today, who we bring to the table, how we involve Global South, how we involve open source communities, coders, for instance, those that I imagine diplomats have never thought about. Those are the new best partners for diplomats to be around the table, because coders will code faster the new legislation than diplomats will be able to negotiate. So they're, in a way, new diplomats as well. And this is what AI diplomacy comprehends. All the new reality that AI is bringing up to the world, Sanjay.
So you're saying we need a new, basically, AI to AI principle and a framework. Yes. Rui, you also have talked about creating an AI diplomacy network for multilateral cooperation. What would be its key stakeholders, and who would be having a seat at this table in this network?
Washington has executive orders, and the U.S. Holds and has regional state-level protocols. Beijing has its five-year plans and its own state-driven approach. Companies like OpenAI or Anthropic, they're setting their own constitutions, their own statements of purpose. None of these frameworks speak to each other yet. It's like having multiple traffic systems with different rules all on the same road. So this ultimately makes collisions inevitable. And that's why I argue for an AI diplomacy network, a permanent multilateral hub. Imagine a Geneva hub for AI governance, where states, companies, civil society, academia can coordinate in real time. Again, bringing back the real time idea, which is a core principle of AI diplomacy. Diplomacy should evolve at real time, in real time speed, or it will dissolve. And the job of this network would be to connect the dots. First, by sharing incidents and breakthroughs immediately, not years later. Second, by setting ethical baselines, the way human rights treaties did in the 20th century. And third, by ensuring that Global South is a co-author, not a bystander, as we've been seeing in the current forums. The way I see it is, if AI governance repeats the exclusions of globalization, then we'll again entrench inequality for another century, and all the asymmetries that we see across geographies. And so we need to put hands on deck and ensure that we're shaping and designing inclusively AI that can actually become the force for correcting those asymmetries that we've created with globalization and other global phenomena of development.
When you look at companies really like OpenAI, Anthropic, or do you look at them as maybe even as countries who are now charting their own constitutions? They're getting more as powerful as countries in some ways.
Let me start by addressing the democratic aspect of AI, which I think is one of the most important ones. Authoritarian regimes, yes, they can move quickly because they don't bother with accountability. Democracies, they need to debate, they need to consult, they deliberate, and of course, they sometimes appear slow. But here's the truth that policymakers need to hear. Speed without legitimacy is brittle. So authoritarian speed cracks also under pressure. And that's what democracies need to focus on, I believe, which is to coordinate. And they can actually work if they coordinate. They can actually be stronger if they coordinate. And I think that this coordination, which is one of the things that I argue in my book, has to have two fronts. Strategically, pooling resources for AI safety, aligning on shared standards. So this would prevent regulatory arbitrage and other phenomena around the miscoordination of standards and AI. Narrative-wise, countries need to prove to citizens that AI doesn't mean choosing between freedom and innovation, which is often the paradox that you hear from some authoritarian leaders or movements. And we can have both. If democracies fail to coordinate, of course, they risk being divided and outpaced, and that might end up being a problem. But if they succeed, they'll show the ability to carry citizens along is the real competitive advantage in the AI age. So you also asked about the way that I'm envisaging this network coordination. And yes, that's one of the proposals I make on my book. One of the points is exactly to come up with a UN-type organization platform to ensure that policymakers, diplomats, open source communities, formal, non-formal actors, all the voices around the table can really play an active role in shaping the next decade.
You know, historically, we've had democracy, authoritarianism, we've got communism, we have socialism, all kinds of, dictatorships, etc. Do you think because of AI, maybe there needs to be a new paradigm shift?
That's a great question. I don't know. I don't know the answer entirely. What I can say, Sanjay, is that old ideologies will matter less. And what we should focus on and how we treat AI, we should treat AI as a critical public infrastructure rather than private projects. And what would this transformation require for both policymakers and the private sector? Right now, AI is in the hands of a few powerful corporations that are way ahead of the statecraft of the legacy institutions, and that's of course not sustainable. If the internet had been born as a monopoly, we wouldn't have seen the explosion of creativity, inclusion, and global connectivity that followed. So we need to make a shift. And yes, we need to treat AI as a critical infrastructure. And that might mean, to your point, public investment in foundational models, the way we invest in highways or electricity grids, should also apply to AI. So to some degree, there needs to be a new, in the new social contract that is being shaped as we speak by AI, somehow the government, the public sector needs to play a critical role. That's the only thing I can say, or at least the only thing I envisage and the point I make in my book. It means open standards, so no single player can be able to lock in the system. And it means also shared governance, moving away from authoritarian or isolationist policies. It means, because infrastructure cannot depend on corporate goodwill alone, it needs to be shared with the other stakeholders at the table, that, again, as I said before, they need to be representative of the voices we need to have reflected on the future of AI.
Reid, there has been a lot of conversation that, you know, the economic gains of productivity or from AI will enable maybe universal basic income, which is UBI, means everybody gets, you know, and that's something that you touch on and you talked about very eloquently in your book also. Rui, you also have talked about that AI could either entrench digital divides or become a force for global equity.
We need collaborative velocity. And collaborative velocity is the philosophy I believe should be entrenched in the new systems, in the new thinking governing the global institutions. So instead of having a reigning, competing mindset, we need to have collaborative velocity. We need to have that collaborative velocity in the new paradigm of AI diplomacy, in the new paradigm of statecraft, but also in the way that voices from the North and the South need to be represented and need to be at the table of decisions. So I do think that we need to move towards an integrated governance paradigm that includes everyone and that can really correct the silonomics, which is a term that I use and I wrote about it. And I use this to describe what happens when we treat every crisis in isolation. So with AI, you see it everywhere. Defense ministries are looking at autonomous weapons. Health ministers are debating AI diagnostics. Education ministers are panicking about GPT in classrooms. Each ministry or each statecraft area or department builds its own little silo. With AI, that changes. And AI isn't a sector. It's a systemic force, like electricity. So you don't regulate electricity differently for hospitals or schools or banks. You create a universal framework, but that need to cut across ministries, across governance areas. It means international protocols for AI incidents, so that when something goes wrong, we're not scrambling around with fragmented responses. And it means also treating AI as infrastructure, not just a product. That's the big shift, I believe. And for policymakers and diplomats, here's the message. If you regulate AI piecemeal, you'll always be behind. Integration is not a luxury. It's the only way to match AI scope and speed. And that, for me, Sanjay, is the real deal.
We have some, and you touched upon past challenges and how international cooperation worked towards some of them, whether it was climate change, pandemic, or some of these other ones. Are there, in your view, one or two key lessons that we can derive from them in terms of putting this kind of a framework together for AI?
Absolutely. And one of the biggest lessons I've just learned when I was serving the open science sector, and it's very recent for all of us. It's from the COVID crisis period. What we've seen was an amazing collaborative velocity. That was actually the example that inspired my concept in the book. because I just realized when serving open science and open access science and open access publisher that we were so fast in coming up with vaccines and a solution to solve the biggest crisis of my life, at least, and the recent decades, because we had scientists, pharmaceutical companies, and governments collaborating at an unprecedented speed. And that's exactly what happened. So we had an international mandate where all the science was published in open access. So we had an open access mandate for all the science, and because everyone had access to the same science, to every piece of science being produced in every corner of the world, that accelerated the solution. So my question is, Sanjay, why don't we do the exactly same thing for climate? Think about this. Almost 50% of climate science is still today behind paywalls. What does that mean? That means that the science being produced in the global south or in the north cannot be accessed by either students. So we need to bridge that gap immediately, and that's exactly where companies have a big responsibility. That's exactly my point when I say that this is not just another product. And there's the need to a mindset shift. They're not just building products anymore. They're becoming stewards for public trust. So for policymakers, it also means to step up, to learn from the past, to learn with that COVID period, not waiting on Silicon Valley or Shenzhen, but shaping AI as a public good immediately. And that requires and demands some initiative. Some proactiveness, requires everyone around the table to have a voice, and requires also some openness to bring in the voices that have been left out for too long.
Yeah, so openness. The only thing is, really, during the pandemic, the fear brought everybody together. The fear of death, the fear of mass deaths, destructions of economies and everything else. How do you kind of say AI, and AI has also become a geopolitical issue, because I want it because it'll help me for, let's say, a country, for their economy, their defense, their national security versus somebody else's. So how do you kind of sell that message to other countries?
Whatever we build together, it needs to be grounded and well-grounded on a trustworthy framework, a trustworthy vision, and a collective understanding on what are the collective challenges and the collective forces that we have at our disposal. Because the planet doesn't hold much longer with these, these social divides, with different approaches and regionalisms. I think we need to, and my message to the world leaders that have their hands on and that have the pen to change at least the legislation, is that we need, AI is already here and is already everywhere. So either we like it or not, things will change. A new social contract will be in place sooner rather than later. And I think we better get everyone on board as soon as possible to ensure that we're successful, as we did with the pandemic. It's true what you said, Sanjay. The fear brought us together, but it was also unprecedented, the cooperation that you had among international institutions and governments. See in AI the opportunity to correct old asymmetries. I think that's enough to form a base of understanding among the ones that will have that will have voice around the table of decisions. So my message is quite clear. I think we need to build trust. We need to build trust among the players that have the responsibility to shape AI, and we have to have the conscience that AI will do it for us if we don't do it ourselves.
Do you think the world now needs a new generation of political leaders who are AI native, a younger generation, of people like you, Rui, who are AI native and understand the potential of this?
I think we need to rapidly transition to a new generation of policymakers, Sanjay. Mm-hmm. And I know it's not easy to change things when you have so many forces competing in what is usually a zero-sum game. But this one is really pivotal. We need a new path. We need a new vision, an AI-native generation of policymakers, one that understands exactly the risks and the opportunities that AI brings, and one that is ready to embrace this as a positive disruption, as I said. Because I look and I speak to many young people in my job. I work in a technology company, so many of the software developers I deal with and all the technologists and people that are on the business, they do have a positive idea about AI. They don't see it as a risk in the first place. Of course, it has its risks and everyone is more and more aware, but they see it as an opportunity to change things for better, change things for good. So understanding that feeling, understanding that that's becoming common sense among the new generations, should really be reflected in the political leaderships of today. So we'll see if AI contributes to close that gap between how older generations see AI and new generations understand AI. But ultimately, I agree. I think we need to transition to a new generation. And I think AI will also put some pressure on that front, to be honest. The point is, Sanjay, the world is transitioning already. Are the policymakers already ready to transition? That's the question for those that are in power right now.
Yeah. So we are in a transition, and Rui says that a new generation, an AI native generation, is definitely needed. Rui, thank you so much. This conversation really illuminates for our audience a critical insight that you provided. Effective AI governance requires the same kind of systemic thinking that you're advocating for in moving beyond silonomics. Your unique perspective that bridges political, economic theory with practical policy experience really offers our listeners a framework for understanding AI governance, which is not a technical problem to be solved, but as a complex diplomatic challenge requiring a new international cooperation, as Rui has laid out.
Thank you so much for having me, Sanjay. Looking forward to a new one. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI podcast with Sanjay Puri. If you enjoyed today's conversation, don't forget to leave a comment. We'd love to hear what you thought. Share it with someone curious about the future of AI. And join us next time for more stories and insights from the leaders shaping what's ahead, right here on the Regulating AI podcast.